Good afternoon, folks. It's the Ag Show on CKMS Radio 100.3. We'll be starting shortly. It's episode number 48, and this is April the 23rd. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. And on this farm there was a chick, prettiest chick I know. With a little curve here and a little curve there, this chick she had curves everywhere. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. And oh, this chick she had a walk, E-I-E-I-O. And how this walk would drive him wild, swinging to and fro, with a little wiggle here and a little wiggle there. Man, this chick had moves to spare. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. When she went walking into town, E-I-E-I-O. The local gentry popped their eyes, carnation, what a show. With a gulp dang here and a gosh darn there, heavens to Betsy, I do declare. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. There was a barn dance Saturday night, E-I-E-I-O. And the fellas came from miles around just to see her do-si-do. With a promenade here and a promenade there, at a square dance, man, this chick's no square. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. I used to be a traveling man, E-I-O. Until I hit MacDonald's place, things were mighty slow. With a little chick here and a little chick there, I didn't have a real chick anywhere. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. This farmer's daughter knocked me out, E-I-E-I-O. I asked MacDonald for her hand, and Pappy hollered go. With a little curve here and a little wiggle there, a gob dang here and a gosh darn there, a do-si-do here and a promenade there. I got my own private county fair. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-O. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-O. That's right, MacDonald. It's all or nothing, baby.
This is Mark Reeser. You are listening to CKMS Radio, 100.3 Sound FM. The Agricultural Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. The Federation represents the primary producers in the region of Waterloo. Our goal is to promote the farm community in support of innovation, hard work, and compassion that is emblematic of the region of Waterloo. The WFA strives to bring together the policy needs of the farmer with the needs of society.
Mobilizing the youth of today, educating them in a better way, training so they won't go astray. Hear what me say, yeah. Give your head to clearer thinking, loyal heart, got to be persevering. Do the Lord a service, make your hands willing, your help for better living.
4-H
for community and country.
4-H
respond to food security.
4-H
I gotta make the best better. Let us get together.
Thanks for listening in, folks. It's the Agriculture Show, and we're just delighted to be here today. It's the April 23rd, and today we're going to talk about an OMB decision in the region of Waterloo, and we're going to talk a little bit about a local group called GREN. And today's guests I'm delighted to have is both Deb Sidrovich and Kevin Thomason. I got that right, I hope.
Yes. Excellent. Yep.
Perfect. Thanks so much for coming, all you guys.
Well, thank you for having us.
And it's really nice that, we have people who are active watching issues that are important to our community, and you're doing that. And we'll talk in both those terms because, one, of course, is through the GREN part, which, Deb, I think you want to talk a little bit about at some point here. And Kevin's going to talk probably a bit more about the about the OMB, the whole issue, how much land really can we build on here?
Yeah, exactly.
So let's get to know you first. We're going to get to know you guys by the songs, too, because we like to play the songs that our guests like. So I got them all tuned in here, and we'll get after those guys. But first of all, let's tell our audience who you are, and what the heck are you doing here on a Tuesday afternoon talking on the farm show? How did this happen?
Perfect. Do you want to go first, Deb? Or?
No, you go ahead.
Okay, certainly. My name is Kevin Thomason, and I am a longtime community resident here who is lucky enough to work in the high-tech sector and was drawn to Waterloo here by the universities and then by some of the opportunities to work with some of the leading companies on the planet. Mm-hmm. But then also realized Waterloo was one of those few places where I could have a great urban lifestyle during the day, but also live out in the countryside in the evening. And I was lucky enough to get a small place out on the west side, the Waterloo Moraine, mm-hmm. and realized once I started living out there just what a unique and special place this is. And some of my neighbors are Mennonite, and you go to these great farmers markets as well as amazing hikes in the woods and wetlands, and yet all this just on the doorstep of the city. So
they say it takes a year to live in a location before it feels like home. You have to see the seasons and so on. Where were you originally from?
Originally from Toronto. I grew up north of Toronto. I worked downtown, took the subway downtown each day for years, and thought that was going to be my future. Like all my other friends, I'd go away to university, come home, and then just do the daily commute in the big city. But that was one of the nice things when I graduated, got a chance to work here in the region, and thought, wow, this is a place where I can wear a shirt and tie to work each day, and yet still have a pair of rubber boots for the evenings and weekends. So, the more, as you talk about that year, the more, it probably took me about 3 years. I'm a little bit of a slow learner, but the more I started to spend time on the land, the more I realized just how amazing and special and unique the land is here. A lot of really interesting species and flora and fauna, as well as just a great community. So I've spent a lot of time over the last few years trying to figure out how do we create that balance, because mm-hmm. we see a lot of growth happening in the region. It's exciting to be in a place that's very dynamic and growing, but we need to make sure we get the right balance.
True, and that's always the issue, and so far I think we've done a pretty good job here in Waterloo. There's many things Waterloo's planning, the way they interpret planning law, that's quite progressive, things about how many farm severances you can have and stuff like that.
Exactly.
So we'll look forward to when you're talking more about the, we'll disparage it anytime you want, but we'll look forward to when we get to the part where we kind of decide ahead.
Perfect.
We might talk a bit more about the particular OMB decision. Deb,
sure.
Tell us about yourself.
I am a resident of the city of Waterloo. I live on the Boundary Road Wilmot line between the city and the township of Wilmot. And as young adults with young children mm-hmm. in Edmonton, we decided to come back to Ontario, where we went to school. And my husband at the time asked me where I would like to live, and I kept thinking about this area, and it was the Mennonite community and the rolling hills and the country roads and mm-hmm. All the produce that is here for us. And that was important to me because I was an Air Force brat. We traveled actually across Canada and finally ended up in Haldimand, Norfolk area. And my parents had a 5-acre gentleman's farm with chickens and a horse, dogs and cats, and even a baby raccoon.
Is that on purpose, or that just sort of happened?
Well, how sometimes the mothers are lost for whatever reason, and then you happen upon a baby raccoon. We took that in, and any case, we had a lot of farm fields very close to our property. And actually, our property, we had 1 acre in garden, and we had 50 fruit trees with a variety of produce. And my mother back then was an organic farmer, as she was quite early in doing that. And I grew up actually working in the fields around our area. I used to, we grew cucumbers. We picked them in 6-quart baskets and dumped them into burlap bags and dragged them to the end of the road for the pickle truck to pick up.
Holy smokes.
We found out later how much we made, and then there were a number of farm fields beside me. We were hired to weed a very large acreage of cucumbers, pick tomatoes in hampers.
Now, that's an honest day's work.
Oh, it is.
Hoeing cucumbers, isn't it?
It is. Mm-hmm. And cucumbers on a cucumber picker. We picked apples, cherries, and pears on tall ladders. You know, the very tall ladders. I actually fell in the neighbor's manure pile once off of a cherry picker, a very dry pile. Not really bad, but. And we used to, at that time, we actually hitchhiked down the road to pick strawberries because, of course, your parents never drove you everywhere in those days. Mm-hmm. And we picked peppers in the neighbor's fields, and I handed tobacco to a tobacco tire, and that's actually when we had horses and boats and, you know, that were actually pulled across the field,
yeah,
especially
when
lightning hit the tobacco fields. The horses don't go down the rows. They go across the field to the barn, you know, when they're scared. So, yeah, and we even made our way to Europe picking asparagus in the neighbor's field. So, I have that kind of experience, and that's what I wanted for my children. I wanted them to be in an area where they could experience that close by. So that's why we moved here.
Those are great stories. I'm so glad I help our audience, our urban listeners, get a sense of our guests who have connected with agriculture and can speak from that perspective about farmers and what in concert with urban life. So you come with great credentials, and I'm looking forward to that. Let's play a song of the song you gave me. Which one would you like to hear first? I'll try to cue this up, and we'll be back with some more stuff.
Well, I think maybe Big Yellow Taxi is a classic, you know. I'm not sure who you have on there. Is it Joni Mitchell, or is it somebody else?
Well, actually, I did find another one called, it's kind of a, well, I'll play that version. It'll be a little treat, maybe. It's called by the Boys something, where the heck is he? I think I still got it here. By Buzz Toys?
Oh, okay. Oh,
cool.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah.
could be a good intro.
So. It could be. So we'll play that. We'll be right back, folks. Thanks for listening in. We'll see you shortly.
This is Stephanie Friedis from the Volunteer Committee on the International Plowing Match. You are listening to the Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM.
And we're back, and that was Big Yellow Taxi. Joni Mitchell made that famous. I hope you didn't mind that version that I found there.
No, that was quite good.
That's a fun one.
Yeah.
That's good. I just want to introduce my co-host, Barkley Knapp, has just showed up. This is Barkley. Say hello to Kevin and Deb.
Hello.
Afternoon. How are you?
Hi.
We're going to hear a little bit from him. We talk a little bit about his adventures. It's Corwin Herbs and Produce, right? I got that right? Perfect.
Excellent.
So we left off with that song there, that's Big Yellow Taxi, and that was a classic. I hate to think of the year it was, but it sure did sum up a popular opinion at the time, you know, what's happening with the land and, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. It's a great song.
I think that was late 60s.
Late 60s?
Yeah. Good time.
Yeah.
And it's sad to see that we still are paving paradise and putting up parking lots.
Yeah, it's still true, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're still dealing with how far do we go with that?
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you're wearing many hats today, and I think what we could start off with is, maybe Deb, you could tell us about GRIN. Tell us, our listeners, who that is and websites and everything you want to do, because this is, maybe tell us how does GRIN fit in with the, we're going to talk today about the Regional Waterloo Growth Plan. Mm-hmm. Now, GRIN did initiate that. Tell us how that works. Does GRIN initiate that thing, or was this something that members of GRIN were already involved in? Tell us what GRIN is first and how that fits in, if you would, please.
Well, GRIN stands for the Grand River Environmental Network, and it came about when the Citizens for Protection of the Waterloo Moraine and seventh generation members decided that we should have a larger umbrella group made up of a number of very dedicated environmentalists or activists who have spent years on various issues within the Grand River watershed. And many of these members are actually founding members of their own groups. We meet, I think we're meeting maybe once every 2 months at this point, mm-hmm. but we meet actually more often if there's an issue that comes up. I guess maybe I should describe what our motto is, or what is GRIN, and that is, and I will read this similar to what you read on your program.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this along. Nice to see what the statement of the goals of the GRIN.
Right, and it clearly says that GRIN is a proactive voice for the environment in the Grand River watershed. GRIN members are activists, watchdogs, guardian stewards, and concerned citizens. We support each other by sharing information and expertise, foster environmental awareness and literacy, and we promote respect for our natural world and our place in it. So as far as the growth plan, I think one of the purposes of GRIN is that we contribute to a number of different topics.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't be initiated by us, but certainly we would contribute to a lot of discussions on that issue and other issues. We have members who are quite involved in their own issues, and one of them is our chair actually works on dump site proposals across Ontario.
Okay.
For example, the Wellington County landfill west of Elma. The farm people there are fighting, fighting proposals across the province. He's also working on a nuclear dump site proposal for the Huron-Gray County farming areas.
Mm-hmm.
And the concern there is even if the nuclear waste doesn't contaminate the soil, or they try to prove that it doesn't contaminate the soil and water in the area, it will hurt the reputation of farming.
So how long has GRIN been around then? Did you mention that?
GRIN's been founded about 5 years ago.
In fact, it'll
be our fifth anniversary in June. And mm-hmm. really it just stemmed from the fact that there are more than 70 different environmental groups in Waterloo region alone. And that's kind of a staggering number. You wonder, gee, how can there be 70 environmental groups in our little region of, you know, 500,000 plus people? And really, when you look at it, though, some are focused on air quality, some are focused on groundwater, some are focused on urban sprawl or mm-hmm. auto reduction, car sharing, bike sharing. You know, the list goes on and on of all the different aspects. Sometimes urban issues, sometimes rural issues, sometimes provincial or even national issues or international issues, such as the tar sands or such. And there was just this realization that we needed to know what each other was doing, mm-hmm. and that by working together, we could be stronger, we could share information, we could share ideas, we could support each other. And then there are those things that come up that require everyone's input.
Mm-hmm.
And that is things like the Regional Official Plan, which is the 20-year growth document. And it's really the vision. And it's required by law. The provincial government asks each region and municipality across the province to come up with an official plan. Tell us what it is you hope to achieve and such over the next 20 years, so the 2031 planning horizon. And this is what the province will use to help determine infrastructure. You know, who gets hospitals, who needs new highways or rail lines or you know, any sort of other infrastructure. But there's also some hooks attached to that, too. The province will dictate sometimes what you have to do. So in our case, the provincial government looked at growth rates across the province,
mm-hmm.
realized that Ontario is likely likely to grow somewhere between 5 and 10 million people over the next 20 years, based on historical growth rates, the levels of immigration set by the federal government, and such. So then the question became of, well, how do we divvy that growth up? Mm-hmm. And in Waterloo Region's case, the provincial government said, we expect you to take about 260,000 more people over the next 20 years.
Yeah.
And so our regional official plan then becomes a document that explains how are we going to accommodate a third more of population, or a 50%+ increase, and yet still keep a quality of life for everyone, for mm-hmm. those who are already here and those who are coming.
So we'll talk to you a little bit more. Maybe we could play another song actually before that, but let's think about for next time that you know, we'll talk more a bit more. Where does the word farmer or agriculture show up in the provincial growth plan? I know it does. There's a section indeed. There, and maybe in the activities of Grin as well.
Yep.
Indeed. But first things first, let's pick another song. What do you want to hear now? And
what do you think, Deb?
I think Acre by Acre by Chuck Brodsky would be good. Yeah.
Okay. Tell us, where did you hear this song, and why did you pick this one?
Well, this likely wouldn't be something that I'd normally listen to, you know, mm-hmm. my taste would, but this, I mean, it's a great song, but I was looking for songs that actually were pertinent to the issues that we're talking about today.
Okay.
And so this one is a song about all farms that are being brought, you know, are being bought up and three generations of farming loss. So.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
We'll play this song and we'll be back shortly, folks. It's the Agriculture Show here on CKMS 100.3 Sound FM. We'll be right back.
His father was a hard-working man. He spent his whole lifetime working his land. He plowed with a jackass built with his hands. The balcony where the auctioneer stands, acre by acre, it all disappears. Three generations in 70 years. The cows and the chickens, the tractors and the barn, big money buying up all of these farms. My own father worked a 12-hour day, from sun up to sundown, the wheat, corn, and hay. I worked right beside him, and I learned from his ways. He taught me to sweat, and he taught me to pray. Acre by acre, it all disappears. Three generations in 70 years. The cows and the chickens, the tractors and the barn, big money buying up all of these farms. I would pass it on down to my own son in time. When my daddy died back in 72, I stepped in his boots. I knew just what I'd do. I had me a dream, and I took out a loan. The interest rates then, they were still pretty low. I planted my seeds, but before they could grow, they came telling me I had to pay what I owe. Acre by acre, it all disappears. Three generations in 70 years. The cows and the chickens, the tractors and the barn, big money buying up all of these farms. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Deb Swadrovich with the Grand River Environmental Network. You are listening to the Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM. The Agriculture Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. The Waterloo Federation of Agriculture represents primary farmers in the region of Waterloo. Our goal is to promote the farming community in support of the innovation, hard work, and compassion that is emblematic of the region of Waterloo. The WFA strives to bring together the policy needs of the farmer with the needs of society.
Thank you for doing that, Deb. That's perfect.
You're welcome.
That is great. I love those words. I got to get some new ones, but I like the whole point of our show is that the last bit is to have the needs of farmers match up with the needs of society. And I'm glad you're here. We're talking about the needs of society, and so glad that you're here. And we'll bring that back to how it fits in with farmers later on. But let's just keep poking away at our show here. This is great. And Kevin, you'd like to step on the microphone here. We'll talk a little bit about the OMB decision and where that's at. Your choice is how far you want to go, because we'll save some time later for the countryside line discussion. But tell our listeners
it
changes every day. Like we wouldn't have been talking like this even like last week.
No, exactly. We have a fast-moving target here, but that's probably a good thing. And the region completed the official plan. Back, Deb, when was it? About 2009, I think it had to be submitted to the province. And that was really our plan for how are we going to accommodate 300,000 more people, and what would our region grow and develop and look like over the next 20 years to the year 2031. Thankfully, ever since the inception, the region of Waterloo has believed in strong balance. Mm-hmm. We have our four rural townships, which balance very nicely with our three urban municipalities, Kitchener, Cambridge, and Waterloo. And right from 1973, when the region was formed, and 76, when the first official plan came in, we always saw a very balanced plan, a plan that tried to protect our farmlands, that tried to encourage growth and thriving communities, but also thriving agriculture and green space. And really, the 2009 plan, which I think is the fifth or sixth official plan throughout the lifespan of the region, mm-hmm. really tried to perpetuate that as well. Seeing more constraints, I guess, on growth, as 300,000 people is a lot to accommodate. That's a pretty good-sized city. We're suddenly adding to our already existing city. Mm-hmm. But also, we don't want to take up a lot more land. We already see where the urban boundaries have pushed right out to those rural peripheries. We don't want to see our Mennonites driven off the land. We don't want to see urban sprawl. We're realizing that as a society, we need to do things differently, mm-hmm. and that we can't just keep having these endless subdivisions that go on and create this car dependency. So that's where I think the region of Waterloo has always been progressive and tried to be at the creation of the Blue Box, ESPA areas, wetland protection. A number of things have been pioneered here over the years, and the region's tried to put some innovation into this regional official plan.
And I think, too, that the province at the latter part of 2010 actually were in support of this regional official plan.
Very
and that's
much.
An important point to remember, too, mm-hmm. as this was challenged by some developers at the OMB level. We do have provincial support here, and we're thankful that they've actually stepped up again, mm-hmm. To support this issue.
Yeah and that is that just last week, our local MP who is on the governing party, and we have four local MPs. For our purposes, as agriculture producers, we figure they're all our, and here's just on the side, mm-hmm. we do have a good relationship with our rural or our urban MPPs. They get it that this part of the region. Anyway, nonetheless, so our local MP with our governing party did say that the province is going to side with the court appeal on the OMB decision. And just want so our audience knows where we're at in the scheme of things. I don't know if we missed that or not.
Very much so. And indeed, we saw the province originally approve things back in 2010 after submitted in 2009. But then there were some developers appeal things, which was unfortunate because this was a plan almost 10 years in the making. Mm-hmm. It had hundreds, if not thousands, of people involved in it, countless open houses, community meetings, professional planners, regional staff,
it was a lot of work. And right now it's actually behind, isn't it?
Well, it's a highly integrated plan, and it shapes what our urban cores are going to look like, how are we going to get around in terms of roads or public transit, what we're going to protect, where do we focus growth, how does infrastructure work? Everything from water plants to sewage plants to new roads and hospitals and healthcare, and you know, it's a pretty thorough document that goes on for hundreds of pages. And it was exciting to see a plan that came together with such grassroots support across the community and get approved by the province with some very progressive and interesting ideas. You know, you look at things like rapid transit, we're one of the smallest communities in the world to look at a higher order LRT system, but we've determined that we would rather focus some of our growth in existing areas. Mm-hmm. We can't really widen King Street or some of these streets, so all you have to do is look at how packed some of the Grand River Transit buses are, and you can see how important suddenly things like the LRT becomes. It was wonderful to see this plan come together. Mm-hmm. Disappointing to see a few developers challenge it. Looking for some of that old sprawl, old-fashioned kind of urban sprawl type growth. And we saw them appeal it to the OMB over the last 2 years. The OMB is a quasi-judicial body, the Ontario Municipal Board, that is used for planning decisions. And for the last 2 years, the case has been heard there. It was broken into three pieces. Don't want to get too technical here, but the first part was just about population growth. You know, are the estimates accurate? Are we really going to grow by that number? The second one was about land use and how much land are we actually going to need to accommodate those people? And then the third part is about the countryside line, the protected countryside, mm-hmm. which one of the really innovative things that Waterloo has done here has put in a hard countryside line.
Yeah, that's really unique, the first in Ontario, I think, isn't it?
Very.
I mean, arguably the Green Belt has
much,
a hard line.
Pretty much the first in North America. Now,
really?
It's very common in Europe. Hadn't have had this for hundreds of years. 600 years ago, we would have seen Germany overrun, mm-hmm. where the towns would have spread and consumed all the farmland, and Germany wouldn't have been able to feed their people the last few hundred years. But by creating their countryside lines, hard edges around the towns, you'll see as you drive through France or Germany or parts of Europe, spectacular green lush countryside, mm-hmm. then you come to these quaint cute little towns. The towns are towns, the countryside is countryside. You don't get this blurring that you sometimes get in Ontario, where we get this periphery where suddenly you get all this the sprawl that sort of happens, and the houses turn into estate subdivisions, which turn into auto body shops, which turn into marginal farms, and it takes a while before you actually come across some thriving farms in some parts.
What's that word they describe the Boston-Washington corridor? We talked about that. What's it called?
Bosniwash. All one city.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and you can see, often call it what I call the tale of two cities, mm-hmm. Which is Los Angeles versus San Francisco. San Francisco, you had all those Berkeley tree huggers in the 1960s that got out and protested and got all these great park and mountain areas set aside as green space, mm-hmm. which then, given the fact that San Francisco is built on a bay surrounded by water on three sides, forced some very dense urban development. Urban development that provides one of the best transit systems, one of the most walkable, livable cities. In fact, San Francisco is the number one tourist attraction in the entire United States. Mm-hmm. But you have these great communities, be it Silicon Valley or Redwood or San Jose or San Francisco itself, surrounded by this great green space that everyone can enjoy. Everyone's only a few minutes from a hiking trail overlooking the ocean or such. Compare that to Los Angeles, which is just basically endless suburban sprawl for 100 kilometers in any direction, some of the worst air quality in the world, and also to do with that, some of the lowest qualities of life, unfortunately.
They
have Disney. That's if you can make it through the south side of LA to get there getting shot at on the freeway or consumed in the smog.
Well, you know, the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture, we do pride ourselves on having one of the better relationships with planning departments in the province of federations, and we do support the light rail transit and the growth plan of the regional planners. And, you know, to the regional planners' credit, they do reach out to us and want to meet with us. So, you know, we're very pleased with our relationship with the planning department. And these issues don't come as a surprise to the rural listeners or to farmers.
And so, I think that's our experience, too, at GRIN, that we are invited to participate in many of the discussions on this. And it's disappointing, you know, that this OMB decision on the land budgets, mm-hmm. issue and how much land we're going to spread out to at this point. It takes away from, you know, things like the LRT funding that's in place. That was a major major investment by the province and federal governments. And also the ESLs and the countryside line, those issues that we've been working on for the last 10 years, it just affects all those issues so much, and really is against the essence of the growth plan.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's very frustrating to hear these kind of decisions being made now. I mean, we're supposed to be moving ahead, looking differently at things, you know, and it's just a step backwards. So
it seems odd that we get caught up in methodologies. I think the last time the methodology was a problem was just this year's anniversary of the Gimli glider incident, where the one methodology was in liters, the other methodology in gallons, and the plane ran out of fuel halfway to Vancouver.
767, that's right. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But that's basically this methodology is what has gotten the difference, I think, in between I think the planners have a more modern. Method of determining where growth, how much growth, and so on, and the development industry has used an older model, which arguably is valid as well, and that'll be left up to various other people beyond our pay scale to figure that one out.
Yeah, I think this is a legal issue at this point. Yeah. I mean, probably more of a political issue to get the province involved, but I think, you know, this is, you know, probably based on the information that's already in front of them, and probably one more on paper at this point, but then they'll have to, you know, get into the fine arguments. So we don't even know if the divisional court is going to hear it this time. We hope, because the province is involved, that they will. But that's...
Yeah, what's the time frame for that?
Yeah, well, basically, what's happened here is, and let me just take a step back to kind of put out the timeline, and that was the plan was appealed. We heard back in January the OMB had ruled against the region, and this was basically two judges at the OMB had decided that the province that the region's estimate of the 80 hectares that were about 250 acres that was going to be required for future growth, which really what the region is looking at and how they determine that was they looked at that patterns are changing, that there are more people wanting to live in cores, wanting to live in uptown condos or lofts or townhomes, being able to walk to the theaters or shops or things like that.
Yeah.
Even the new younger generations. You look at so many of these high-tech startups in town, and so many of those kids, I'll call them, who are starting them, they just want to live close to the office, and it's more important to them to have Wi-Fi than it is for a backyard or a white picket fence. And you know what the region has realized is we've seen just even in the last few years where we've seen a complete reversal, where we used to have 30% of development happening in town and 70% happening out in traditional suburbs.
Yes.
That is now reversed when within the last five years we've seen those numbers completely flip. 70% of all new homes, housing, apartments, and residences are being created within the urban area.
Just up into, we're on King Street here in Waterloo, on 108 King Street North, and you can just look up down the street and see some old factories, refurb, brand new buildings, the density is increasing.
And this comes back to the LRT too. You know, you've got those rails in the ground. That's what you know entices developers of a certain sort to come into this area, and that's what we need more of.
Yeah. Like it seems like the developers get that because they are building, even though the lines. I guess it's done. It's a fait accompli. It is going to be built. They just haven't
the LRT. Correct. Yeah, yes. Yeah. The LRT is probably past a point of no return at this point, which is probably a good thing because we hear people across the country calling and advocating for more rail transit.
Yeah.
The bottom line is people like trains, they like LRTs, they're not always big fans of buses. And we are seeing, and I think we need to be cautious not to lump all developers together.
No,
We're seeing two sorts of developers in Waterloo Region. We're seeing some progressive ones that are trying some very innovative mixed-use developments with high-end, low-end, all kinds of creative use in terms of commercial, industrial, retail, residential, some really nice, walkable, amazing things. We're also seeing some that are basically just saying that, and unfortunately this was the argument at the OMB, that over the last 50 years we've required X number of acres for urban sprawl, therefore the future's the best gauge the past is the best gauge of the future, so therefore we need X number of acres more. And unfortunately the developers were able to turn the 80 hectares, the region was forecasting a 1,000-fold increase into 2,500 acres, or about 20 to 30 full-size farms consumed by additional urban sprawl. And as Deb alluded to earlier, not only is there the cost of that farmland and that, but where the real cost comes in is the infrastructure.
Yeah.
To service that area, that's suddenly many more kilometers of roads, of sewers, of sidewalks. We have an infrastructure deficit already and need to make better, more efficient use of the infrastructure we have.
Mm-hmm.
No, not see these plans that are pushing real dense developments way out into the hinterland. You know, the OMB ruling requires 13,000 apartment buildings to be built out on the furthest periphery of the city. It's absurd to think we can accommodate 13,000 apartment units out on the periphery. Mm-hmm. The roads are already clogged going to and from town. How are we going to be able to support that? It would make far more sense to have those apartments actually located in core areas where we've alluded to, where there is public transit, where they have the ability to walk to the schools or to their workplace, or better yet, cycle and cycling trails, and just provide that choice. And I think one of the things the regional official plan really does well is provide choice. Choice in housing, choice in transportation, choice in residence. And unfortunately, what this OMB decision does is it takes away some of that choice. Mm-hmm. And we have the OMB demanding that we open up thousands of acres of our rural lands for old-fashioned urban sprawl development mm-hmm. that we know isn't sustainable, that we know is not what is selling to the degree that it used to. And it seems to be a step backwards, because resources that could be spent elsewhere in the region are going to have to go into supporting, you know, millions or tens of millions or even perhaps hundreds of millions of dollars worth of infrastructure that might not be what people want in the future. And we've also shown it doesn't have to be that way. We've shown with the official plan, here is a viable alternative that can accommodate this growth of 200,000 to 300,000 people without having to do this.
Well, and thanks for seeing that there are two types of developers.
Yes.
The ones, there's both sides to it, and the OMB is not inherently bad. That they are that appeal group. There's nothing wrong with OMB. That's not a decision in many people's minds, and the process is working. But it depends if the OMB is on doing what you want or not. It depends whether it's your friend or not. But it's a good process.
This just seems to be a bit of an extreme decision, particularly given how much work and energy had gone into the plan and how many people had been involved in its creation, and just how highly integrated it all is.
Yeah.
To suddenly take one piece and really send it askew seems a bit irrational.
It would be fun to get one of those that party on this show sometime, just to hear what they have to say. And it's nice to hear both sides of the story. And
Without a doubt, and I think the region has put forward some very good rationale and arguments.
I don't know if I'm not really set up to do it, but I prefer my guests to speak of what they think about it. maybe another type of the show, we can have like the back and forth thing going. That's a little bit too crazy, I think. But
exactly.
And I'm very appreciative of our MPPs, John Malloy and Catherine Fife, who have tried to work together on getting this support from the province too. And I think probably after this is done, we probably will see some kind of push on the floor, to look at the OMB and how it's how it operates in the future with this Marchese bill that's come forward too. I mean, asking for the City of Toronto to be taken out of the
The OMB jurisdiction.
Jurisdiction, really? So, I mean, I don't know if that's the way to go, but, because there are citizens here who have used the OMB system and have been successful with that, too. So we have to take a look at all of that, and that's a difficult subject, but it doesn't help us here.
Right.
I think that's something that we'll have to work on later.
Yeah. OMB reform can be a long-term issue, and it might need to be. Every institution needs to grow and evolve as the framework and the society around it changes. We're certainly not saying the OMB is perfect here. We're also not saying that we need to reform it right at this moment either. We think it's a discussion that needs to be had. But more importantly, we need to make sure our regional official plan is back on track and that we as a community are the ones planning our future, and that we're not being forced into really kind of absurd decisions.
So we'll let that process work out. We'll look for the obvious choice, but we don't know. We'll let that process work. What we're going to do right now is pick another song.
Perfect.
Deb, pick another song.
Well, there's a cute little ditty called When the Developers Came to Tea by Zoe Lewis. It talks about bulldozers cutting through the rolling hills and how the neighbors are now gone. So it's a cute little one.
Before the show, I actually went on YouTube to see that.
Yes.
And it's a fun song.
It is, yeah.
We're audio here, but it had a kind of a a thoughtful video with it as well. So
yes,
we'll play that song. So where did you hear this song? And
On YouTube.
Okay.
Yeah, that's I'm on the internet, trying to get information, and this is where I picked this up. Yeah.
That's great. Thanks for your suggestions, and we'll play that now, and we'll be right back.
Good, thanks.
I had lilacs outside my room. I had a little blackbird whistling me, a blackbird tune. I had conkers swinging high in the chestnut trees. I had enough honey for at least 1,050 bees. I had butter, flies and cups everywhere. I had a little cornfield with scarecrows and crows to scare. I even had clover, three leaf and sometimes four. But what I had back then, I'm afraid I don't have any more. 'Cause big bulldozers cut through my rolling hills. Men with suits and cell phone ears put concrete on the daffodils. And gold in the milk, diamonds in the sugar, stirred it up with bribery. Old Mrs. Brown couldn't turn them down. When the developers came to tea,
Mrs. Brown, it's the developers here. Will you let us in right now?
I had next door neighbors dropping in. I had a little corner store full of almost everything. A pinter on my doorstep, thanks to a friendly cow. But we just go like sheep to ugly supermarkets now. Streams of cars and traffic jams, they put a motorway where there used to be baby lambs. Gold in the milk, diamonds in sugar, stirred it up with bribery. Old Mrs. Brown couldn't turn them down. When those developers came to tea, well, they put gold in the milk, diamonds in sugar. Took my childhood away from me. Old Mrs. Brown couldn't turn them down. When those developers, those mean developers, when those developers came to tea.
That's a great song there, folks. It's your host, Jeff Steger. I just want to run a quick little promo, just some business from last couple weeks ago. I had the pleasure last night to talk to David Piper, and he was the chairman of the International Plowing Match, and I got a little two-minute clip from him, and they've announced some of the grants money they've given away. So let's play that, and we'll be right back with our guests. I'm speaking to Dave Piper right now about with the International Plowing Match 2012, and Dave has some news for us that the prizes, I guess, or the financial donations have been made to the various organizations.
Yeah, we've worked out all our financials from last year, and after we've paid pretty much all the bills, looks like that we have made a local profit of about $350,000. So out of that money, we have given away approximately $110,000 so far to various volunteer groups who helped us out to help them with their volunteer program and their local communities. And these volunteer groups came from all across the region. You know, Woolwich, Wellesley, Wilmot, North Dumfries, from all the cities. It was a great regional event. And then we have just this past week given away $200,000 to five different charity groups, foundations actually. So we gave $40,000 each to the Cambridge Memorial Hospital Foundation, the Grand River Hospital Foundation, the St. Mary's General Hospital Foundation, and the Kitchener and Waterloo Community Foundation, as well as the Cambridge and North Dumfries Foundation. We also gave away $10,000 to the Township of North Dumfries to balance off some of the support that we had from them this past year. And they certainly were very helpful to us, as were all the townships, but North Dumfries very much so, given that they were hosting in Roseville. So we'll have a little bit of money left after that. We'll hang on to that till about December. And once we know that all the bills have been paid and we wrap up our accounts, that money will be divided up and will be offered to various charities once again. So all the money that we have raised from the 2012 plowing match last September all goes to charity, about $350,000 to the Waterloo region.
This is good news. It has been a long journey.
It's been a long journey. But it's satisfying now to see that the results of all the 1,400 volunteers, all the results of all of their efforts and the organizers and the countless gifts from so many sponsors that we had have paid off in the long run.
Well, this is good news, and folks, that's our story from the Plowing Match 2012. I've just been talking to Dave Piper, who was chairman of the 2012 Plowing Match, and there'll be some more news later on, I think. The story's not all done. Thanks so much, Dave.
Thank you. Thanks very much, Jeff. Good. That's great.
If they...
Hi, this is Kevin Thomason from the Grand River Environmental Network. You are listening to the Agricultural Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM. The Agricultural Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. The Waterloo Federation of Agriculture represents primary farmers in the region of Waterloo. Our goal is to promote the farm community in support of the innovation, hard work, and compassion that is emblematic of the region of Waterloo. The WFA strives to bring together the policy needs of the farmer with the needs of society.
Thanks, Kevin. I'm intimidated. I have two guests who have a better command of the English language than I do. I just mashed things all the bits, and you guys did a great job.
That's great. I don't know about that, but thank you.
Oh, it is great. It just it's when you tell yourself to read something, all of a sudden a little bit of this, it gets really crazy. So, but thanks for taking a little time. I just wanted to run that little bit about the Plowing Match, and we had a lot of them on last year. It was first time. It's in Waterloo Region in 1995, and that was back again last year, and it's awesome.
It was great. I made it down for a full day, and loved it. So,
yeah.
It was excellent and great to see it back in Waterloo.
Yeah, a rainy day or a dry day?
A bit of both. Rained in the morning, was windy in the afternoon, but mm-hmm. a little bit of sunshine. So you just had to hang on to your hat.
We had lots of volunteers. Were you volunteering or visiting or
just checking it out, tracking through.
Yeah. I didn't make it in, but I heard that the region of Waterloo had a tent set up where there were roundabouts.
Yes,
that's right.
Right in the center.
They had a great roundabout to get. You had to go through the roundabout to get into the tent.
That was super.
A wood chip roundabout.
Yeah.
But a wonderful exposure, to. The farming industry, I think for especially the urbanites and children in particular. So I think it's an important event.
A good match will have 15 to 20,000 students come through. Without a doubt, they all come back just thinking, wow, you're never going to see an event like that again. Because how often you just don't have a flying match or a big outdoor show like that.
Right.
And those memories stick with them for a long time, even though it may be muddy and the boots are all thing, but it makes for a bit of sachet for the whole experience, right?
Oh, it's all part of the fun.
And we, it's a big part of the flying match's mandate to educate and and we hope those people come back to visit as agriculture changes and they come back and see what's in the farm. So.
Yeah, I think that's one of the unique things about Waterloo is we have such a balance between the urban and the rural.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think it's great when the Plowing Match is held close to a large city like that where, 20 minutes you're able to be out there and right at the show and you're able to enjoy the show all day and then kind of scoot back in and hit the theater in the evening or something. You can truly have the best of both worlds.
That's great. I had John Tutt on the show a couple weeks ago. What a hoot.
Yes.
It was just a great time.
Yep.
He was talking about his movie it's about fracking in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And the star goes out and has to... talk these neighbors into signing over the mineral rights. So so interesting topic.
A tricky one. A little different in the U.S. than in Canada too, where the Crown owns our rights and it's the Queen who has it. But all tough issues.
I know. We could have a lot of fun here, folks. How long can you stay?
Well, there are no shortage of community issues.
I know.
That's right. So.
But let's keep on with our little bit of information. We hope to the public on our little bit of the world we're talking about . And we'll get talking again about the OMB decision, and it's a time we talk a little bit maybe about
there's both regional implications here as well as provincial.
Okay, let's do that first because we do want to talk about how do these things affect farmers
exactly
at some point. So maybe we could start moving into that conversation as well. But give us that framework that you started, please.
Well, and I think the nice thing with this is or not the nice thing the challenging thing mm-hmm. is that it impacts everyone.
Right.
Every resident in Ontario has a stake in how we're going to grow and how we're going to develop and what we're going to become. And we are lucky. We live in one of the greatest countries in the world. Mm-hmm. We live in one of the richest provinces in the world. We live in one of the best communities in the world. And sometimes you forget just how good we have it until you end up in other countries or third world countries or such.
And that's the truth.
It's true. And these documents, in some ways, sometimes just sound like mundane planning documents. Yeah. On the other hand, it really is the vision of who we want to be and what we want to become. And you know, there are places out there that had it once and don't. You know, Argentina is a country I was in not that long ago. And they were a country that, 80 years ago, was one of the richest countries in South America. Look at the agriculture scene they have down there. And yet now they're a country that has gone through years of challenges, decimated currency, financial collapse. And, you know, they are really having a tough time. So, you know, we need to make sure that we plan for the future properly. We even see across Ontario and Canada, communities that once were booming and now are struggling. We can't ever take our success for granted. And yet we need to ensure we have that balance. You know, we need to make sure that everyone in Waterloo is succeeding and that the growth of our communities isn't coming at the expense of our farmers, or that, you know, the boom in agriculture isn't coming at the expense of people who can't afford food or whatever. It all comes down to a balance. And I think that's where the regional official plan is such a key document. Why it takes 10 years and hundreds, if not thousands, of people to try to craft what that vision is. And also how they all fit into the provincial side of things. Yeah. And in the province, this feeds into the Places to Grow Act, the Greenbelt Act, all kinds of other larger acts that really do impact both rural and urban areas. And one of the reasons we've seen such strong provincial interest in this OMB decision was the fact that when the OMB ruled that the Region of Waterloo had to make available 1,000% more farmland for development and expand so rapidly, in the Places to Grow Act, not only did they strike down some of the land budgeting, but they also struck down the timelines and goals. And in the Places to Grow Act, the province had very carefully articulated that you had to hit a certain number of jobs and residents, a density per hectare, so that we don't sprawl all over the place, and that it had to be done by 2031. So it was basically every municipality, didn't matter if you're York Region, the City of Toronto or Hamilton or wherever, you suddenly had these targets. You had to manage your land a little better. You had to make sure you got this number of jobs and hectares per acre, and you had to do it by this time frame. And unfortunately, in this decision, the OMB not only ruled against the Region of Waterloo, but it also struck down the density provisions. It also struck down the timeline. And it suddenly said those timelines were just a mere suggestion, and those densities, they don't really need to be achieved. And so suddenly we saw the province in one swoop lose all ability to control and manage growth over the coming decades.
And that's probably why they're in it, and that's probably why other planning jurisdictions in Ontario are watching this very closely.
Well, not only other jurisdictions are watching this very closely, but that's suddenly why we saw so many environmental organizations. Environmental Defense, the Ontario Greenbelt Alliance, Earthroots, the David Suzuki Foundation, Ontario Nature, the list went on and on of both provincial and national organizations saying, yes, this is just a regional OMB hearing, but what's happened here has provincial significance. And in fact, it's been the province, the Ministry of Municipal Affairs and Housing, the Ministry of Transportation and Infrastructure, the Premier herself, all have suddenly realized, hold on, this has provincial significance. We need to get involved. And that's why we now have the very unprecedented step of the province actually joining with the region on an appeal against the Ontario Municipal Board, against the OMB, at a divisional court. Mm-hmm. And it's very strange to see the provincial government take standing at a provincial court.
That's crazy, huh?
It's the first time that we can figure out in almost a quarter century the province has intervened in this way. But it does speak to the importance of needing to get this right.
And I think, too, it's been quite worrisome for the region to think that, you know, here we've been working on a plan for well over 10 years. We think we're following what we're supposed to do. And then this can go south on us very quickly. And so should we be looking at things like the Greenbelt, asking to be included in the Greenbelt at this
point? Came across our table as well at times.
Yeah, and that's another thing that we should be looking at, because we were missed in the first round. We just caught a corner of it. But we might have to take a look at this again, because it's surprising how these things can change very quickly.
Well, just even this last month, 2 weeks ago, I was at a meeting with a provincial organization, the Federation of Agriculture, and they were pointing out the difficulties of even merging up the same language within the escarpment Act with the Green Belt
and the Oak Ridges Moraine,
and there was another one. And we all know what they are. I get it.
Right?
But they don't use the same language to describe the same thing. There could be conflicts within those groups of like mind.
Yes. Very much so. And that's part of the challenge, is making sure we get that right balance.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think green belts can be perceived as both positive and negative. What we're trying to do is provide some certainty. You want to know if you're going to be on the land for the next generation so you can invest in the barn, invest in the land, invest in it. And I think we see some challenges around Toronto sometimes where some of the farms are left derelict. They know that they're on a ticking time bomb and clock, and there's nothing sadder to see a farm that's run into the ground because there's no certainty, there's no investments being made into it. And, you know, that's when you get into countryside lines and protected countrysides and green belts and such. You know, what the large purpose of that is just to provide some sort of timelines and certainty in planning so that we can make sure. And I think that's one thing the region of Waterloo has done very well. Mm-hmm. If you look, you know, when you come up to the edge of our city, we still have thriving farms just on the other side of that line.
Because we have the intact areas like Benjamin Road and the Wilmot Line.
Exactly.
All arguably our most intact boundaries yet.
Yes.
And I don't, there was never been much of a challenge to expand that way, but it is the Toyota lands and this
down
Southern Western.
Yep, Southwest Kitchener.
Yeah.
So. Exactly. And I think that's what we want to make sure, you know, if it's urban, let's make sure it's thriving, high-quality urban environment, not a cardboard sprawl like you see too often in other communities. If it's farmland or rural, let's make sure it's really high-quality green space or natural areas or a really productive wetland or a really successful farm. And I think when we do it right, you get a 1 plus 1 equals 3. You see some of the things that we see in Waterloo with thriving farm gate sales and great farmers markets and farmers having the best of the city where they can be into the mall or into the theater within a few minutes. Or on the flip side, where folks from the city can be out into the countryside easily.
Just a question. Beginning of the show, you talked about the Waterloo Moraine.
Yeah.
Those that don't know what a moraine is, could you explain on that and why it's significant to protect one? And thirdly, where is the Waterloo Moraine? So three questions in one.
Perfect. Great question. I'll take some of it, and Deb can take some of it, too. And basically, the Waterloo Moraine, a moraine is basically a giant pile of gravel left by a glacier. And if you look, if you go back about 10,000 years in this area, we had the Laurentian glacier sheet come down over Quebec and part of Ontario, and we had a Wisconsin glacier sheet come down from the west. The two of them, a kilometer-high pile of ice, crashed together and met here in Waterloo. As these glaciers pushed forward, they pushed a great big wall of gravel. When the Ice Age ended, they left this 1,000-foot-high pile of gravel behind, and that pile of gravel is very hilly, and the sand and gravel in it doesn't hold water very well on the surface, but it holds it very well in aquifers. And so when the settlers first came to this area, if you look on the west side of Waterloo, we find the Waterloo Moraine. That was this very hilly land that was very difficult to clear and work and farm. So for the most part, they skipped a lot of it. And roads like the Wilmot Line or Cedar Grove Road or Weimar Line really went around features rather than through. They're not like a lot of farm concessions that go right through. So we have these interesting artifacts of these moraines that in the end have turned out to be these vast, diverse areas of flora and fauna that have been relatively untouched. There's great wetlands, great water aquifers, and in fact, in the case of Kitchener-Waterloo-Cambridge, about 80% of our groundwater comes from these water aquifers that are under the moraine. So if there's anyone in Kitchener-Waterloo-Cambridge hoping to have clean water coming out of the tap, it's in their best interest to make sure that our remaining moraine lands are well looked after. And when it comes to groundwater recharge and making sure the rain that falls and the water that we depend on to replenish these water aquifers, 80% of our recharge happens on only 30% of our land here in Waterloo Region. So we really need to make sure that those recharge areas are well looked after, well cared for, and can sustain the water needs of a city of 500,000-plus growing people.
So do you know if we're talking about countryside line, the other concept, I don't want to get off track too much, but it was to protect the countryside.
Yes.
Which I think included the features as the marine as well.
Exactly.
Right?
And that was a way of protecting that groundwater recharge area, was they really identified those key moraine areas, that peak, that top of the moraine, and areas where, and this is where we'll get into a bit of geology here, but if you go into the valley where the Grand River is, and believe it or not, the Grand River does flow through a valley here. Cambridge is half the height above sea level of the north part of Waterloo. Cambridge sits at about 600 feet above sea level. Mm-hmm. As soon as you're out on the west side of Waterloo. I live at 1,320 feet above sea level. And that's why sometimes you see the talk of a snow belt. Well, the snow belt just happens to be the top of the mountain that gets the snow. And there are times of the year when the temperature is hovering around freezing. It's true. Waterloo will have 2 inches of snow, and you go down to Cambridge and it's green grass. You've literally dropped that 600 feet off the mountain. But when you're in that valley, when you're down by the Grand River, we have a clay aquitard, a layer of clay that the glaciers wash down there that is in some places 40, 50, 60 feet thick. And we all know water doesn't go through clay very well. So the water aquifers underneath that clay are very well protected from any sort of contaminants by that nice clay till layer. But as you come up the mountain, as you come up onto the Waterloo Moraine, up the hills and the rolling west side, that clay layer gets thinner and thinner. So, for example, by the time you're out to Fisher-Hallman Road or such, that clay layer might only be 10 or 15 feet thick. And, in fact, you go beyond that. And that's one of the reasons why some of the developments like Vista Hills or such on the far side have been so controversial, is actually in many places there is no clay protection. So what you get is sand and gravel and water, rainwater that you pour. It goes right straight down into the ground and into the aquifers. There's no cap, there's no protection. Yeah. And so if you spill a liter of motor oil, that oil is going right down into the water aquifer. And it's good if it's clean rainwater going in. That's when I talk about recharge areas. We can very quickly fill up those aquifers or replenish what's coming out. But on the other hand, it's very easy to contaminate and also very dangerous. So that's why some of these subdivisions were more controversial, was the fact that there was no protection. And should we be building homes and paving streets? And what happens when somebody washes their car and that runoff goes straight down into the water aquifer without some of the protection that Mother Nature has provided naturally in most of the other parts of the region?
Yeah. And I think it's important to remember, when you take a look at some of these old decisions by the OMB, that it's really not a matter of whether or not these lower aquifers will be contaminated. It's just how long.
Yes.
So, and we really don't know, although there's some information that the developers provided on things like clean water collector systems, where they can gather more water and put it directly into the ground and get to the lower aquifers quicker. We still don't know what the results of those will be. And so we're dealing with a lot of subdivision applications that have some old decisions attached to them. And so that's been an issue for our group. And so one of the purposes of our group is to show up and to provide information, because quite frankly, the government doesn't have an awful lot of funding to do all that work. So I find that, like you say, we are invited to participate, and that's a really important thing here.
Well, and we're finding, too, we're in an interesting era. Ever since Walkerton happened about 10 years ago now, we look at water and water sources very different, and we realize that everyone has the need and the obligation to try to protect the water, the agricultural community, the urban community, industrial, commercial, you name it. It's a balance. And, it's one of those things that we need to carefully manage moving forward. But as Deb said, sometimes we had decisions that were made by planning back in the 60s and 70s that would never be allowed now. But what you do when you have a decision that was made decades ago and you can't rescind, how do you draw that balance? And how do you still allow it to go forward in a manner that's sustainable and not going to be overly impactful? And that's where, certainly some of the local controversies have come with some of the building and construction out on the Waterloo Moraine. It might not be allowed now, but if it's grandfathered, how do we do it in the most sustainable manner? And we've been lucky to see some really innovative things come along. I think post-Walkerton, we've seen a lot more awareness on stuff and things really moving in the right direction, both rurally and in the urban environments.
Yeah, and there's issues in the urban or rural part, too. There's the groundwater source protection committees, and there's farmers on those committees, and they're at the table, and there was some big implications for agriculture as a result of Walkerton as well.
Huge, but the farmers are often the ones who know the land the best. It never ceases to amaze me, and Deb talked about clean water collector systems and engineers. I think if there's one lesson we can take over the last century or so, it's that too often man has thought we can engineer our way out of things. And we try something, and then we realize after the fact that actually Mother Nature had a better system than the ones we were able to create. And I think that wisdom in the land is often still seen in the agricultural community. The people who walk the land every day are the people who know the land the best. And how do we make sure that that voice is heard?
And we'll talk about it in our last segment. We're going to play one more song. What's another song, Deb? What do you want to play next?
Well, I think at this point it might be appropriate to play Escarpment Blues by Sarah Harmer. Yeah. Talking about the exploitation of Niagara Scarpment.
Yeah, I like that song. I had a previous guest actually play that one, so yeah, it must be a popular of the whole year of our broadcast. We've had that song requested twice, so it's a hot item.
She's quite active.
And how did you hear this song?
Oh, I think probably in our association with the Greenbelt Alliance. I think you know, a lot of the work that's done there, I think she's connected somewhat to them as well.
Yeah.
Now, was this part of the Dufferin pit up there that they're talking about? Or?
Sarah's certainly been involved in a number of things, you know, various pit applications or things like that, for sure.
Yeah. Sarah's mother actually lives just around the Milton Escarpment, and there was a pit that was proposed to go in between there and Flamborough, and a lot of transport trucks going through some back roads, and her mother was active in successfully helping fight that with a bunch of other people. So Sarah did get involved through that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and I think aggregates are an important one for the farming community, because certainly you could see there's a potential to lose a lot of great farmland, prime farmland, to aggregates, and after a pit goes in, it's very, very hard. In fact, I can't name any case where it's ever been rehabilitated to the point where it could be successful farmland afterwards.
Well, that's a very bold statement, and you're probably mostly right. There are cases that there has been done, but they're few and frequent, and the Provincial Act even does specifically say return to agriculture, so there's another one that could be actually, what exactly do they mean by that?
Well, and something great to see more of.
Yeah. So let's play Sarah McLaughlin, and we'll be back with our guests, and thanks for listening in. It's the Agriculture Show, CKMS 100.3 Sound FM, and it's a lovely Tuesday afternoon here in Kitchener-Waterloo. We'll be back.
If they blow a hole in my backyard, everyone is gonna run away, and the creeks won't flow to the great lake below. Water in the well still be okay. If they blow a hole in the backbone, the one that runs across the muscles of the land, oh, we might get a load of stone for the road, but I don't know how much longer we can stand. Thank you.
muscles of the land. Or we might get a load, a stone for the road. But I don't know how much longer we can stand. Or we might get a load, a stone for the road. But I don't know how much longer we can stand.
Hi, this is Sean Dunnett from Dumfries Service Company. You're listening to the Agricultural Show on CKMS Radio 103, Sound FM. The Agriculture Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture.
Okay, wow, the time is flying by, you guys. I can't believe this is awesome. I'm so glad you showed up today. And so we're getting into the last bit of our show today. And so the question I have for you folks is, so where does agriculture, where do farmers end up in the topics that you've been working on? What does our urban listener have to know how farmers fit in with what you're working on?
I think one of the topics that's probably going to come up, even more and more with us is the increasing awareness of the need for water conservation in the region. I know that your VP of the Federation of Agriculture says that this is a major concern for farmers who can see how the region at some point will need more wells and water that rural people will need to continue farming, something that's been discussed at length by even the opponents to some of the environmentally sensitive landscapes. I mean, there are farmers that have shown up and talked about, we're concerned that they're going to come over into this environmentally sensitive landscape and you're going to take my water that I need from my walnut groves, so that's a real issue. And I think also, too, what we need to do a little bit more work on is recognizing the true value of nature and some of the work that the Davis Suzuki Foundation has done, in particular Faisal Moula, who is the Director General of the Ontario Northern Canada area of the David Suzuki Foundation, and talking about more and more about the value that we can put to these green spaces and farmlands. So I think that's really important that farmers and the people within the city talk about. So.
Yeah, I would agree. I think a farm, it returns more than $80 an acre or whatever the current rent or yield could be, depending on the crop or location. That there's still a whole host of other services, be it water, air, oxygen, clean space, green space. It is quite interesting to see. Even just here in Waterloo Region, the brilliant minds that are being attracted as we become Quantum Valley, as we have CG, the Center for International Governance and Innovation, or the Perimeter Institute, and we have some of the world's smartest people from Stephen Hawking right on down coming to our region. And what can we have here to attract people? We're not like an institute in Switzerland that has soaring mountain peaks or things like that. But all one has to do is go for a drive in the evening on some of our country roads and see the number of people just out cycling, the number of cycling clubs or teams or joggers out or things like that. And we often just forget that, sometimes there's just a great recreation value. As much as sometimes, the kids from the farm want to come into town to see a movie, sometimes the kids from town want to go out to the countryside to ride their bike. And I think that as we look forward with the regional official plan, we need to articulate what this vision is for our community. And I think so much of Waterloo Region's identity has always been our rural areas. Few cities identify themselves by their countryside, ironically. But we still often refer to ourselves as Waterloo County. The image of Mennonites, the image of farmers markets, it is such a core to our essence and being. And I think as we look to the regional official plan and moving forward over the next 20 years, then the next regional official plan after that, the next 20 years beyond that, I think almost everyone will unanimously say that they still want to see some balance between urban and rural, that we just don't want to become one giant urban sprawl, and on the other hand, we don't want to stagnate and be like some unfortunate communities in Ontario or Canada or countries elsewhere that actually see decreasing populations or stagnant growth. Somehow we're going to have to find the right balance, and I think that's where we need the awareness. That's where we need people to step up and get involved. The regional official plan has been drafted collaboratively over the years, but there's still an opportunity right now to make your voice heard, in particular with this appeal. And if you go to the website that we've set
up. Yeah, you want to do that, right?
Yeah.
So there's Facebook and the website. Go.
Yeah, there's Facebook under Smart Growth Waterloo. So just search under Facebook Smart Growth Waterloo or the website www.smartgrowthwaterloo.ca. That's www.smartgrowthwaterloo.ca. And that's a website that helps to explain a little bit about what is the official plan, what does it look like, about this current OMB decision, about the repercussions of it, about what you can do about it. And we've set up easy forms there so that you can mail your thoughts, ideas, comments to your local politicians, be it your local municipal councillor, your regional councillor, your member of provincial parliament, a minister, or even the premier. And it's very easy. Send them your thoughts, what's important to you, what you want to see in the future, because that's the only way we're going to get the future we want, is by speaking out and not letting others decide what our future is going to be.
Well, hopefully in action to your committees that, you know, there's a place for farmers in that.
This
seems
so.
A long stretch away, you can preserve farmland, but that doesn't mean the farmers can be there because
the issues can make a living. We need to make sure our farms are viable
and
thriving. And you know, as much as we talk about thriving communities, we need to, that needs to be both rural as well as urban communities.
And I think we have to bring in the public in general, but mostly our children. Yeah. I like to look at this in much simpler terms as a mother, and I just want to make sure that, you know, they're connected to farms and farming, and that there's the respect there for what farmers contribute, you know, to our cities.
Yeah.
You know, and that's an issue, I think.
It's hard to put a dollar amount on. Like, it doesn't.
That's the
trouble. I know, like, obviously, the farmers are agreeing with what you're saying. You've got to have farmland to farm.
Right.
But I mean the farmers are in there, and I know that's beyond the mandate of what you're trying to do at Gren. It was you're bringing awareness of the issues, but not necessarily having the developing the answer is the hard part.
Right. Oh,
exactly.
I think this might have to come down from the province at some level, too. I'm not sure.
If we were going to do it at Maiden Waterloo situation, how would you define farmers in Waterloo region? What would that be?
Well, you know, we're lucky to have some of the most productive farmland in the country.
Right.
And some of the best farmland in the world. And I think we have some unique opportunities. You know, certainly there's the opportunity for farm gate sales, our farmers markets, and things that we're already famous for. We're also famous for innovation, and be it University of Waterloo, Wilfrid Laurier, Conestoga College, the University of Guelph, I think there's all kinds of opportunities there to look at really creative, progressive things in the future, be it different crops that can be grown, different uses for crops, all kinds of different bio uses for things, and really I think we just need to push those boundaries. As much as we might have quantum physicists in downtown Waterloo doing things, I'd like to think we have just as much creativity going into, you know, what are the other things we can do that can increase the cash yield on some of those crops and make it more than just beans and corn or such. So.
Yeah, like, huh, do we have to create new special zoning where smaller farms are allowed? What kind of...
Perhaps. And I think that's where we can be creative. And
or
I think that's
should
where...
This be under, should farmers be under the tourism, the Department of the Waterloo Region?
Well, you know, there could be some aspects for that as well.
Maybe that's a crop we sell now is not so much food as it is the experience.
Perhaps. You know, Deb certainly alluded to the need for education, engaging young people, and new Canadians as well. You know, I think that there's a real opportunity there. And because we're smaller scale in Waterloo, because our urban folks can be in the countryside in 10 or 15 minutes, it's not an hour and a half drive like folks in downtown Toronto or Los Angeles, who knows how long it would take to get to a farm there.
Yeah.
Perhaps we need to be innovative and look at things we can do to come up with those sort of solutions.
Where else would you invent them? I mean, we're talking
really
radical different views of what farmers are and what they do, specific to what's required in our area as compared to, and that's what we're this audience is only our area here. So it'd be so exciting to see some new models, some new funding, some new analysis, some new perceptions of what farmers do mean here.
And I think we underestimate the value of the Mennonite community as far as tourism. I was reading a paper about, I don't know how true this is, but I was reading a paper about how the Mennonite community in general don't really stand up and step forward when it comes to policies and planning. And so it's important for us to kind of step up there for them, you know, to make sure that that community is protected, because there is value, you know, from that community as well, too, in many ways.
Yeah.
And tourism is one of them.
Tourism
is
it.
They do attract a lot of people to this area.
Yeah,
attracted me to this area.
So. Exactly. And then that's the kind of discussion we're interested in from the farm perspective, is that it's not just growing corn and beans, as you said.
Exactly.
What else do we have that we can sell to make a living? And
it's got to be value-added.
Maybe we should have a special economic development part of regional government that says, how do we make sure those people out there can make a living?
Yeah.
We know how to intensify, we know how to build things and city structure, but how do we build a countryside that's also...
Well, and how do we make sure that we're adding that value? And it's a challenge, frankly, that all of Canada is struggling with right now. You know, Alberta is struggling with, you know, do we actually refine oil here, or do we only sell crude? The forestry industry is struggling with, do we just sell raw trees, or can we actually produce finished forestry products? And, you know, I think the same thing goes with farming. I think where I get optimistic is Waterloo has always been a culture of innovation. If you
if we can invent countryside lines and so on, we can invent new models.
Without a doubt. Look at Governor David Johnson and his whole talk of we're a barn-raising community and the innovation that's here. And that's where I think, you know, that innovation just doesn't stop at the boundary of the university campus or whatever, you know, and I'm optimistic that, you know, who would have ever thought, even when the blue box was invented here, you know, 25 years ago, it's not even that long ago now, it never ceased to amaze me when I'm traveling through, you know, some obscure part of Vietnam or Hong Kong or Brazil or whatever, and you see these rows and rows of blue boxes. And you know, I'd like to think that if anywhere is going to find an answer to some of these problems, it might be here in Waterloo.
Yeah.
We have these close bonds between the urban and the rural communities, and that we can ensure they both thrive and that we have those innovative solutions the future is going to require.
And as a mom, it's really important for me to think that, similar to what my kids had, that they can go explore a creek, they can go into the forest and chase snakes and or find snakes, and they could you know, ride their bicycles to a local business and pick up a potted plant, you know, that my son did. I think, you know, when he did a little something wrong, and so he went down to the local nursery and picked up a plant, rolled with one hand, and this daylily in a pot in the other, to bring home it to mom to say, I'm sorry, you know. Those are the kind of things that you want, you know, for the children of this area, that the fields aren't that far away. And you can enjoy the local produce. You can stop off at the different farms and the roadside stands and really take advantage of what we have in this area. So it comes down to some really simple things for me, is that, you know, it's the quality of life and enrichment there.
And you know, I read the local papers, and all of our local editors and writers have, I think at one time, wrote a story about, well, when I was young, my subdivision backed up in farmland, and we had a lot of fun playing out there.
Yeah.
And whether you write for the Kitchener Record or the Waterloo Chronicle, they all have people that have lived in the area.
Yeah.
There is a real groundswell for keeping those special areas like that. And hopefully in Waterloo, if we can invent countryside lines, we can figure out ways how in fact we can keep people on that land and communities. And that's a complex one.
Ensure both sides of the line thrive.
Yes.
Well, and that's where this OMB decision is a critical one.
Yeah.
That's why we're here today, is to try to raise the awareness of it, make sure that people are aware of these planning decisions that will determine the next 20 years of our future and the longer term. Make sure that people get involved, speak up for the community that they want to see, that they want to live in.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly visit the site at www.smartgrowthwaterloo.ca. Let people know what your thoughts and ideas and visions are, and together, hopefully, we'll get there as a community.
So, this is awesome. I have a lot of fun here.
Excellent. Thank you for having us.
Well, thank you very much, Jeff.
Let's pick another song before we play out here, and then we'll say goodbye, and then as we're done the show, we'll play that song.
Okay, let's do Houses in the Fields.
Okay.
By John Gorka. It talks about spaces won't be spaces anymore.
Okay, sounds good.
Excellent.
This has been a lot of fun. Barclay, you want to tell us a little bit about what you're doing? You're getting it. Barclay has a greenhouse, so every week we talk about where he's at with his greenhouse.
You're a busy time of year right now.
Do you want to speak about what you're happening down there?
Not more a greenhouse than a sitting room with some grow lights in it.
Yeah.
Well, my basil and summer savory just reached the four-leaf stage, so I'm pretty happy about that. They didn't die on me this year. And my hot peppers, most of them are germinated. I keep them in a glass of water just so you can watch them. Some people They like to wrap them in wet paper towels and then put them in a Ziploc bag.
Mm-hmm.
I find you can't keep an eye on them then, so I just took a bunch of jalapenos and ancho poblanos and cayenne peppers last night, and they're all germinated from the endosperm to come out, so I put them in some soil so they can start growing shoots.
That's perfect. And tell us again what your website is.
www.corwinherbsandproduce.ca. Corwhin for Corwin.
Perfect.
Google can't find me yet. I haven't had enough hits.
You'd have to put your mega tags in the top of your web page. I think that's what does it, right?
Exactly.
That's what does it. So, okay, folks, we've had a blast here today. Hope you enjoyed your Tuesday afternoon, and thanks for joining in with us today and listen to our show. And come back next week. We'll do it all again, and some more guests and some more great tunes. And once again, thanks, Barclay, for coming out. Kevin and Deb, thanks for coming out. And we're going to play out today with... Houses in the Field?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
My pleasure, thanks.
All right, we'll see you later.